All right, Matthew Holt. Last of our gorilla interviews on the floor. We're still in the Qualcomm Life booth. We're not quite sure why, but where are we? Okay. So I'm here. This is Marty Cohn. He is the chief medical scientist. He's the most qualified person I've met at HIMSS. Probably the most qualified person at HIMSS altogether. Accessing number series. Was at IBM Watson, now at a small company called Centrion, which used to be called Jointly Health. Marty, tell me a little bit. Give me a flavor of your background and what you're doing at IBM and Watson before we turn to Centrion.
Thank you, Matt. My background is I'm a biomedical engineer. I'm a physician. I've been a healthcare executive, a healthcare policy analyst, and for the last 15 years working in using healthcare information for clinical decision support.
So you actually haven't had a real job.
That's what people say is I can't hold on to a job. So I was with IBM for 8.5 years. Amongst my projects at IBM was Watson for Healthcare, and 14 months ago joined what is now called Centrion.
Great. That's a great background. You're obviously a fine catch for it. What do you say, an 8-person company?
We're already up to 20 now.
20. Huge, huge. Okay, great. So tell me a bit about the company and the sort of the idea of the product. Okay.
Centrion is the company that does predictive analytics for patients with complex chronic disease, with the goal of reducing or eliminating avoidable hospitalizations for those patients. In the United States, the patients with chronic diseases such as congestive heart failure and diabetes and emphysema or COPD, for example, account for 70% of what's spent on healthcare.
Sure.
And our goal for the future is to change the healthcare system from reactive, taking care of you after you get sick, to preventive, reduce the likelihood you get sick. But if we're spending 70% of our money on patients who are already sick with chronic disease, we need to focus on that group. And that's what we do. So what we do is integrate data that we have about the patient from longitudinal health information with data we collect from home monitoring devices in the patient's home. We collect all that data and then look for patterns in that data that predict this patient is going to be very sick 3 or 5 days from now. Because for most patients with congestive heart failure or COPD, for example, the processes that lead to severe illness actually start perhaps days before the patient becomes aware. So we are looking for the patterns in their heart rate and blood pressure and oxygen concentration and weight and so on that say that process has started, so we can identify that patient far enough in advance that their care team can intervene, treat the patient, and reduce the likelihood they'll get sick enough to be hospitalized.
Okay, makes a lot of sense. Let's talk about the practical way. You've got a couple of things sitting here, which are not things that you make, right? But are things that you plug into.
That's right. What we do.
So hold those still, so Greg can get a good shot.
We collect the data from devices such as this. This device in my right hand is called a pulse oximeter. It measures the amount of oxygen in your blood. This other device you attach to your chest, and it measures things like heart rate and temperature, heart rate variability, your activity, and it lasts for 4 or 5 days, and then the battery has to be replaced. And so the technology for devices is very rapidly changing from, you know, when 10 years ago you had to use a pump up blood pressure cuff, to now things that are much simpler and take much less effort on the part of the patient.
So now the patient is advised to do this occasionally. It goes in through the Qualcomm hub, and then it arrives in your world, which is the interesting part. So let's go from the device stuff on the peripheral the patient's using. What happens and who is looking at something like that?
Okay. Well, this would be an example of where we already interpreted the data to say that we're concerned about this patient and you should look at this patient. So on the top row here, we show the level of alert. It's red, which means we're very concerned about this patient. It doesn't mean, you know, this patient is sick. It means that our analytic prediction is that this patient is very likely to be sick in a few days. And this shows why we're concerned about that. In this case, the patient's blood pressure and the patient's weight have both increased. And our analytics say that's a bad combination for this patient. When this happens, the patient's likely to get sick. So it gives now the doctor or the nurse manager information about this patient. They can look at this patient and say, aha, I'm going to have to give this medicine or maybe have the patient come to the doctor's office so we can intervene and prevent the patient from deteriorating further and avoid and reduce the likelihood of an avoidable hospitalization.
So let's talk a little bit about the business of doing this. First off, you have the problem of making sure the patients either wear themselves or use this thing or wear it, right? So there's the compliance issue there, which I don't know if that's your problem or your client's problem. And then the next problem is you've got a lot of data coming in, you've got to use these algorithms to filter out the noise and avoid false positives and and worse false negatives, right? What is the secret sauce in the middle that does that for you?
Well, we do a few things. First of all, when we get a list of proposed patients from the healthcare system, we look for patients that are likely to benefit from home monitoring. A lot of the patients won't benefit. So you have a patient who carries a diagnosis of COPD, but has never actually been hospitalized for it. Not a lot of reason to monitor that patient because there's really no acute care event to avoid. So we look at patients that are likely to benefit from them. And then the enrollment process is usually up to the healthcare system. They will find the patients. But we have the ability to track the patient's participation. So if the patient is not doing the measurements, we're not getting the information, we can alert the healthcare system that that's going on. But you are right that patient compliance, patient participation is a problem. One of the reasons it's been a problem up until now is they haven't seen any benefit from it. Most of the earlier systems had relatively little benefit. What we expect is with our somewhat more sophisticated system, the patients will realize all of a sudden, instead of being admitted three times a year, that they're home one of those instead of in the hospital. And that benefit, that value, if you will, is what motivates people to do anything.
So tell me a bit about so now we've got the data coming in. Well, what actually are those algorithms, how they're designed? Give me a sense about how they work and how sort of defensible, I assume that's the core of what you're up to. Yeah. How defensible are they as a sort of business model?
Well, when we start collecting data on the patient, we establish a baseline for that patient. One of the limitations of other systems is they use absolute terms, like, a 2-pound weight gain was considered an alert for congestive heart failure. It didn't matter if it was a 75-pound woman or a 300-pound man. We establish the baseline for the patient and then look for deviations from that baseline. So we already start off with somewhat more personalized view of things. And then we have a set of models, and we have a platform that allows the physician or the people responsible for those patients to create their own rules of things they want to look at for their patients, because they know their patients better than we do. So we give them the basics, the foundation, then they create their own rules in natural language. They don't have to understand computers. And then we learn from our experience. You mentioned false positives, false negatives. If we get a false positive, we feed that back into the system. And since, okay, I made a mistake, and work to improve itself. If it's a false negative, the same thing. If it's a true positive, then we feed that back in. And what we found with our first small group of patients is that by using this machine learning system, we can improve what was our initial specificity out of the box of about 40% to 87% over 5 months, just by using this feedback. So when we start to work with a healthcare organization, we make sure they understand that out of the box, we're going to be doing better than the existing systems, but it's not the best we're going to be. This is a learning process for them and for us. And over a period of several months, then we really hit our peak.
So let's say you mentioned 87%, which is a pretty good number. Do you have any data from the early stage trial? Give us a sense about how big it was to indicate what happens in terms of cost reductions and outcome improvement.
It was too small a group to be able to do a real estimate on that. We had some very special successes in one of the early groups in monitoring the patients. The system identified that a patient who was on dialysis had been over-dialyzed and was dehydrated, and gave the physician the alert in enough time that they were able to rehydrate the patient and prevent a trip to the emergency and the hospital. So we know the system works. As far as the greater detail, we're bringing on several thousand patients in the next few
months. Let's talk about that. So you build it, it's up, it's ready. How do you spread it, and give me a sense of, you said the company's up with 20 now, give me a sense of who you're going to be working with and how you're going to be funding it.
Well, for example, one of our major projects coming up is a project for patients with COPD with CareMore, which is a...
Sure, very fine. Very fine. Sachin Jain, new CMO there, right?
Right. And so we're going to do a research project with 2,000 of their patients, 1,000 monitored, 1,000 controlled. And our research partner is the Scripps Translational Science Institute. So we're doing a very solid academic research program involving these patients, because the literature is a void as far as really what matters in this home monitoring. So we know, because we have avoided the pitfalls of earlier ones that were doing better already, but really, really want to learn and, you know, basically create the knowledge that tells us how to do this even better. So this is a research project. Everybody understands it that way. Nobody expects that it's going to be wonderful the first day, but that it'll rapidly improve as we create all this feedback. It's called an adaptive system.
Are you going to do that first before you go to market at scale? Or?
Yeah.
Are you patient enough investors for that?
Okay. Well, one of the limitations on the impact of health information technology is the inability to show value. There's lots of great technology out there, but showing that it actually makes a difference, that patients managed with the technology did better than patients managed without the technology, is less present. We want to prove with real numbers, large numbers of patients with respected institutions, that we can do that.
And then give me a sense about the funding of the company, the backing, and where you are?
Venture capital supported. We do have revenue, but we have investors.
Ballpark, how much you raised?
Our Series A round was $8
million. Okay. So that'll keep you going for a small trial or two before you have to go back to the well.
Right, but again, these are our paid research projects. You know, everybody has a vested interest in them because we actually do expect to be helping patients. So all these are paid research projects.
Fascinating stuff, and it'll be building those algorithms and that whole data analysis part as you go. I've been talking with Martin Cohn. He's the Chief Medical Scientist, what a great title, for Centrion.